Thank you for a great first hour, Kayla. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC, Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. We have some more great content coming up for you in our second hour, starting off with Glenn Olson and the rest of the news team bringing you local news for the week. Then we have my Eau Claire Eats segment, where I had an interview with a customer discussing the bar and grill style restaurant called Galloway Grill in downtown Eau Claire. After that, we have Matt Rothschild, who will be bringing you information about an indie video game called Your Walk. Following that, Tyler Henderson will bring you a Blue Gold sports update. After him, we have Jenna Vandazan, who will be hosting her public history segment. Then Brianne Liga will present her research segment. She will be talking about what she found out about alcohol usage in Eau Claire. And finally, we will wrap up Hour 2 with my event pick of the week. After that, stay tuned for Courtney with Hour 3. Again, thank you for tuning in. I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. Here is Glenn Olson with the news.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Blue Gold Radio News. I'm Glenn Olson. Eau Claire students are being given a crash course in diversity and teaching. Simone Foster has more.
A group of protesters waved their signs, sayings like, "Islam is a religion of blood and murder." Many at the Arab International Festival saw hate.
Unless they're beliefs, like, you need to respect them. I just can't believe someone would be so rude to do that. I'll never understand that. Like, those Bible believers or the people who come on our campus, like, how can you say stuff like that?
I don't believe in, like, forcing beliefs on other people. Like, you can inform respectfully.
That was the sound of education students engaging in a class discussion about cultural differences and their feelings about them. It's an exercise to get students to become aware and open to differences of views and perspectives. Most importantly, it's about how these students will take this learning experience into their own future classrooms. This course is named ES385, Social Foundations of Human Relations at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Brianna Dubiel, this year's Martin Mogeson Scholarship recipient, says that she has plans to incorporate the lessons from this class into her student teaching next semester, which is a requirement for all student teachers.
Honestly, having ES385 last year, that opened my eyes to a lot more from coming up from a perspective of a middle-class white student who grew up in a small town. I wasn't exposed to these kinds of concepts.
She also has plans to take lessons from the 12th annual Martin Mogeson's Lecture Series that was held on March 12th, accompanied by keynote speaker Amy Bentliff, who discusses education and the sense of respecting differences in one another and taking action against unfairness of all kinds.
Most children fail in schools not because they lack the necessary cognitive skills, but because they feel detached, alienated, and isolated from others and from the educational process. I've worked with youth who have been labeled at risk my whole career, and they reject that label.
She explains how this can be a life-changing experience for youth who feel like school really isn't cool or interesting. She uses her research and experience in her middle school classroom in Oregon to provide the audience with evidence that youth should be allowed to have honest discussions in their classes and in their neighborhood. Bentliff believes that this overall approach of what she calls anti-bias education fosters student-to-teacher relationships and encourages students to look at the world through diverse people's eyes and experiences. This event, in its entirety, started in honor of Martin Mogeson, a 1952 graduate of Eau Claire, who was a victim to a school shooting in 1969 by a troubled student while he was serving as principal in Tomah, Wisconsin. In his memory, the Mogeson family contributes to the Eau Claire College of Education and Human Sciences. At the annual event, the college gets experts to speak about education engagement. It also provides a scholarship each year to an education major such as Brianna Dubiel, who demonstrates to be an outstanding teacher in the future. Assistant Professor Angela Wong, professor of the ES385 course that gets education students ready for real-world teaching, says that she tells her students at the beginning of the semester that it is not going to be easy. This class creates space to discuss topics that are the least talked about and may be somewhat controversial.
Definitely. I mean, being able to discuss issues and concepts like privilege, for example, right, and power and oppression, which is definitely necessary for everybody who's part of this world. Mm-hmm. Particularly, I mean, we have a lot of teacher educators or educators in general. Mm-hmm. And so need to acknowledge our own biases, and we talk about that in class, that we all bring our biases and stereotypes, and now how do we dismantle.
Wong also says that being introduced to the anti-bias education style that Bentliff talks about at an early age is very important.
Our young people see race. They know that race, you know, while it's a social construct, they see like differences, quote unquote. And so not being able to engage in such topic just does definitely do disservice to our young people.
Assistant Professor Torres, another professor of this course, says in an Open Eau Claire interview that this class is one of his favorite courses to teach. Torres says that students taking this course will understand the reasons why they want to become a teacher. He adds that this course is set up to evaluate these reasons in full and help students brainstorm ideas that lead to the diminishing of prejudice and racism. Also, he says this course will help students become receptive to world diversity. And that's exactly what the Martin Mogensen Lecture Series intends to do each year with the help of the College of Education and Human Sciences. Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Simone Foster.
In light of recent outbursts of racist incidents on the UW-Eau Claire campus, students held a campus-wide protest to show solidarity. Brianna Liga has more.
The UW-Eau Claire Chancellor and Dean of Students held a campaign on Thursday outside of the Davies Center to combat racism, sexism, homophobia, and transphobia. The campaign called Not on My Campus, Not in Our Community allowed hundreds of students to sign two large banners to show solidarity with race, gender, sexual, and social equality. Dean of Students Joseph Abold says the campaign's goal is to make students aware that negativity exists online, in the community, and in the world, and to give them the knowledge to combat racism and other isms.
And we want people to have the skills to be able to stand up to that when they see it.
Campaign volunteers handed out buttons that read the hashtag #NotOnMyCampus and live-tweeted photos of students and community members and faculty holding up signs with their pledge to end bigotry and racism.
I think that it can mobilize students who might otherwise remain silent. I don't think that some hardcore bigot is going to walk by and say, oh, hey, I'm not going to believe that anymore. But I think that students who would hear something or see something and think, you know, that's not right.
Earlier this month, a UW-Eau Claire student posted a racist comment on Yik Yak, an anonymous social media app, which was directly targeting the Hmong community in Oak Ridge Hall. In 2012, an anonymous student left a message containing racist language toward Hmong students in the girls' bathroom of Towers Hall. UW-Eau Claire student Devin Dawson says he's been targeted by prejudice, even violently. He hopes the Not On My Campus campaign will help others who have been affected by bigotry see there is a community of those willing to help, and he hopes it will make perpetrators of bigotry see how much damage they cause.
Everyone on this campus needs to feel safe, just like every other person on this campus.
Abold says this won't be the first event for the Not On My Campus campaign. He says to look out for more and to keep your eyes peeled for the signed banners, which will be placed in different spots around campus. Reporting for Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Brianne Liga.
With spring break this week and all the potential partying going on, spring break brings some of the highest numbers of incidents and assaults. Carrie Salinas reports.
Spring break is the time to let loose and stereotypically go on a crazy adventure to places such as Panama City Beach, Florida, or even Cabo, Mexico, with your friends. What they don't tell you is that with all this fun, serious consequences can come if you're not careful. Research shows that more than 97,000 students between the ages of 18 and 24 are victims of alcohol-related sexual assault or date rape during spring break. Victim Service Director of the Center for Awareness of Sexual Assault, Amanda Likeness, says that the risk is easier to find than one might think.
I think any time that more alcohol is consumed and there's a general party atmosphere, I think we see an increase in sexual assault, just like we see an increase in personal injury, accidents, all sorts of things like that.
So where are these places people should be cautious about? A recent study shows that the most dangerous spring break destination in the United States is in fact Orlando, Florida. But how does one both have fun and be careful? Likeness says that general safety precautions, such as the buddy system, is good for anyone. By watching out for your friends, finding it out if someone starts to feel unsafe, and even looking out for strangers needing help are good tactics to stop sexual assaults from occurring. Likeness says that sexual assault is something that we all cannot pretend doesn't exist, especially when it's not during spring break season.
So I think we can't go around ignoring the fact that it's possible. Like, we're all invincible, so I think if we just kind of have it on our minds and make sure we're watching out for our friends and know how to spot a dangerous situation, I think that's really what's going to help.
So if you are one who is planning on drinking, try to maintain a level of sobriety. Be aware of your surroundings and trust your instincts if something doesn't feel right during your fun and relaxing spring break vacation. Kiri Salinas, Blue Gold Radio News.
UW-Eau Claire's Student Senate will be elected electronically now due to polling changes on campus. Raina Boydell has that story.
Don't look for ballot boxes for this year's Student Senate elections. You won't be finding them. After Student Senate voted in favor of a virtual voting place Monday night. Starting April 20 to 22nd, students will be able to cast votes through a one-of-a-kind Qualtrics survey link, in effect giving students direct access to a virtual polling place and more time to cast votes.
They have access all the way from 8 a.m. on Monday, the first day, all the way until 5 p.m. on Wednesday, the third day. So they can vote at 2 a.m., they can vote at all day. They have all this extra time after when polls normally close.
That's parliamentarian Carissa Mueller. She's in charge of addressing how to hold the online elections. And given Qualtrics is the preferred survey site of the university, it's a format she says is most familiar to students. But some of the concerns raised throughout the deliberation about the e-ballot include Senate's inability to provide a watchful eye when votes are taking place. Senators are allowed to campaign online as well as offline, and these new conditions do not prevent students from casting mobile votes while near a candidate, particularly while talking to one.
In that case, if the student pulls out the phone, the candidate doesn't stop them, they continue to talk while the student is taking a ballot, that is a campaign violation because they would be violating the student's right to a secret ballot as well as soliciting the student on university grounds, which also is a violation under university policy. And so it's kind of like a double whammy there.
And if a situation of misconduct does occur, Mueller said there's a plan on how to act.
If those situations keep popping up, then we're going to send out a sort of mass email to all the candidates informing them that this is a campaign violation. If you're caught doing this, there will be consequences against that.
Raina Boydell, Blue Gold Radio News.
That's all the news for now, but stay tuned for the rest of the 5 o'clock hour on Blue Gold Radio, 89.7 WUEC Eau Claire. For Blue Gold Radio News, I'm Glenn Olson.
Thanks for that, Glenn and News team. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. Up next, we have my Eau Claire Eats segment. This week, I had an interview with a customer of the bar and grill style restaurant called Galloway Grill. This restaurant is appropriately located on Galloway Street in downtown Eau Claire. Galloway Grill provides a comfortable and casual atmosphere to enjoy some classic American cuisine. Stay tuned to hear what this customer has to say about their eatery. Hello and welcome to Blue Gold Radio and welcome to Eau Claire Eats, a food segment hosted by me, Sammy Wenzel. This week I have my friend Sam here who's going to talk to me about a great place that she thinks to grab some food in Little Eau Claire. So Sam, what is exactly this place that you want to talk to us about?
Galloway Grill, of course.
Of course, right? Okay, great. I've been to Galloway Grill and most people just end up calling it Galloway. I have enjoyed my visits there, so what is something that you might tell someone who's maybe never been there or maybe never even heard of Galloway to get them interested in trying them out?
The first thing I notice when I go in there is it definitely has a lot of Eau Claire memorabilia, especially with the history. There's a lot of pictures on the walls from early settlement here and making it Eau Claire, and it's kind of homey, everybody's nice, and the food's really good.
Okay, awesome. I definitely notice all their little historic pictures and everything, and that definitely makes it nice and homey in there for sure. So what is something that you would say is your favorite thing to order at Galloway?
It never fails, I always get the Queen's Tropical Burger with mozzarella.
Yum. I've seen that burger, and it sounds good. I have yet to try it, so I might have to try it.
It's delicious.
So I'm just going to put my little 2 cents in, but I just have to say that I love their deep fried pickles.
You have to order them.
Oh, you just have to. They're just extremely good for some reason. Like, I don't know if it's the batter they use or the way they cook them or something, but it just makes their fried pickles so superior to, like, the other ones that I've had.
I know, they're my favorite, definitely.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, getting back on track, do you have something in mind that you would maybe recommend a friend to try that's not exactly what you always get? Is there something else that you would recommend?
They also have very delicious sandwiches. And pasta. I know a lot of people that get the pasta and chicken sandwiches, everything that people order, they always say it's very delicious.
Okay, great. Well, I must say that this conversation is definitely starting to make me hungry.
Me too.
Okay, so what first got you interested in trying Galloway? How did you first come about hearing about them?
One of my friends actually found it, and she said, hey, I've been at this place one other time, but would you like to try? And I said, yeah, definitely. And to be honest, I didn't even know that that building was what it was until I walked in.
Oh, yeah, same. That's really great. Word of mouth is definitely good advertising.
Definitely.
Okay, so Galloway Grill has this cozy little spot in a line of buildings down on none other than Galloway Street here in downtown Eau Claire. So how did you, as a customer, personally feel that Galloway does with the space that it has to work with? Do you think their restaurant comes off visually pleasing to possible other customers?
I would say so. It definitely has a specific mood. It's definitely community-oriented. And for being a very narrow restaurant, it's very narrow. It's longer, but narrow. Mm-hmm. They definitely have room for the people they want to bring in.
Okay, great. I would definitely say that I agree. Okay, so how would you say that Galloway compares to all the other numerous bar and grill style restaurants that Eau Claire has? What makes them stand out against the others? What makes them special, in your opinion?
It kind of has that hometown feel when you walk in. They smile right away and be like, oh, I'll be right with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like they know you already before they set you down.
Yeah, that's definitely a good feel. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, so now from what we've discussed already, I would think it's safe to say that you have a pretty positive opinion toward Galloway.
Most definitely.
But I'm going to ask this anyway. How would you rate the quality of their food? Would you say it's good, maybe even excellent?
Definitely on the way to excellent. Definitely.
All right. Good, good. So, in general, how would you rate the staff at Galloway? Would you say they're friendly? Are they helpful? Do they seem to know what you as a customer feel that the workers of a restaurant should know?
They definitely do, and they're definitely aware of your interests as well when you're looking over a menu. They're really nice, and they're always willing to help out. They're always checking on you, making sure that you have everything that you need.
Okay, great. That's good to hear. Now, considering the money aspect, how would you rate the pricing of Galloway Grill? Would you say it's fair pricing? Do they offer a lot for your buck?
Yeah, it's definitely fair pricing. You definitely do not leave there hungry. They give you a lot of food, and, you know, it's definitely fair. Like, I always get the Queen's Tropical Burger. It's around, you know, $8-$10 by the time you get your bill. I mean, but I always add fries because I love their fries. They're great.
Their waffle fries are good.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that they're very decently priced for what they give you.
All right. Sounds good. So how important do you think that a local small business like Galloway Grill does in a moderately sized town of Eau Claire? How do you personally feel that the success of a place like Galloway would affect Eau Claire in general?
I think that for where they're located and all of the construction going on downtown, they're doing pretty well. I wish that they would kind of expand a little bit just because I'm kind of biased, but they're very good.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of them as a business for holding their own and time of change coming downtown. I think that they do pretty well.
Okay, great. Thank you for that perspective, Sam. So, Galloway Grill sounds like a definitely just a really great place to grab some food with friends, maybe even family. I'm sure I'll be making my way there soon again, and I'll probably definitely bring someone with me.
Me too.
Good, good. Thank you so much for all of your input and perspective on a great local place to eat, Sam. I really appreciate you sitting down and talking with me.
Anytime.
All right. So that wraps up this week's broadcast of Eau Claire Eats. Please join me here next week so we can tantalize you more with another great place to have a meal in Little Eau Claire. Also, if any of you have any suggestions for a local place you particularly love to eat at in Eau Claire, please definitely feel free to email me those suggestions at wensels@uwec.edu. Thanks again for joining me, Sam.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, keep tuning in to Blue Gold Radio for the rest of tonight's broadcast. Listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. If you're just tuning in, I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. Up next, we have Matt Rothschild, who will be presenting information on an indie video game called Year Walk. This video game is loosely based on a Swedish tradition known as Arsagang, translated into Year Walk. I'll turn it over to Matt for the full details.
Year Walk is a 2013 adventure game, which is made by Swedish developer Simogo. Year Walk is loosely based on an old Swedish tradition called Arsgång, which translates to Year Walk. The major highlights of the game is the atmosphere and the immersion. The environmental art style is good, yet simple. The soundtrack is a good complement, simple in its execution, but in this game, it enhances the game instead of hindering it. The gameplay is simple. Basically, it's an interactive novel where you swipe left and right, navigate the map, and solve puzzles. Each area also feels like a page, but instead of words describing the environment, it is the art of the game. What I found compelling was reading the Swedish folklore in the game. To learn about the world you are in and what can help you progress in the game would be included in the encyclopedia articles in the game. For example, things like the Brook Horse, which in Scandinavian mythology was a horse that would emerge from the bodies of water, where it would attempt to lure children into riding on its back. After that, it would gallop back to the water, where the child would drown. After hearing that, you might become aware of the atmosphere of this game. Articles like these really intrigued me, which for someone that does not typically drop by Google to search Swedish folklore, it's a passive educational experience. This was a big kudos for me. For those tuning in, this is a recollection of the game Year Walk by game developer Simogo. The atmosphere of the game is very interesting at times. At times, I found myself relaxing, wandering the snowy landscape, and then, with a turn of the music, I was truly scared. One example of this was when I followed a creature called the Druid, a very beautifully drawn and animated character. What I liked about this specific section was, after reading the game's encyclopedia article on the character, and what it was, I ended up doing exactly what the article said would happen, despite what it was. I was basically one of those dumb characters in a thriller movie that you yell at to not go into that dark room. Basically, in the same situation, you would think, I would not do the same thing. But despite that, I was enthralled and I realized I had fallen for it. The reason for this is it was a great puzzle that emulates and embodies the being you were chasing without letting you know what was going on. The only negative thing I would say about this game was at times I found myself somewhat confused by the puzzles. Perhaps because I was unfamiliar with the exact hints that the puzzles were involved, there was a lot of Swedish and Nordic sigils in the game that matched up with each other that, as a culture that I was unfamiliar with, I didn't get it. At times I also resorted to trial and error attempts to just solve the puzzle. The other thing was the navigation of the game, which was a bit tedious. I would have liked the ability to flip to different areas in the provided map after going there the first time. What I'm thinking is you would select an area on the map and then go there. No different than flipping a page in the book if you want to backtrack. For WUEC 89.7, this is Matthew Rothschild signing off.
Thanks for that, Matt. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC, Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. Coming up next, we have Tyler Henderson bringing you information about Blue Gold Sports for the week.
Welcome to the Blue Gold Sports Recap. I'm Tyler Henderson, and this is WUEC FM 89.7 Blue Gold Radio. The UW-Eau Claire women's softball team picked up two wins Friday afternoon, bringing the record back to 500 at 11-11 on the season. They beat Stevens Point 14-5 and 13-2 in the doubleheader. The Blue Golds got on the scoreboard early in both games, in the opening game scoring a run after an error by the Stevens Point shortstop. They scored 10 runs in the first three innings in the first game and 6 runs in the first three innings in the second game. All in all, the Blue Golds put together 30 total hits, 15 in each game, on the day. Casey Arnold had a big day, going 5-for-7 with a double and 5 RBIs, and Taylor Prince also went 4-for-7 with a double. Amanda Fisher also had a great day that included a 4-for-8 performance with a double, home run, 6 RBIs, and 2 stolen bases. The senior Fisher improves her batting average to .392 on the season with 5 home runs and 22 RBIs. As a team, the Blue Golds are batting .303 on the season with a .376 on base percentage in their 22 games, also including a .420 slugging percentage and 14 home runs. Now 2-0 in WIAC play, the Blue Golds will travel to I-94 rivals UW-Stout on Wednesday, April 8th, for a doubleheader starting at 4 and 6 p.m. The men's golf team finished tied for 4th at the Illinois Wesleyan Invitational with a team score of 6.07, while Brady Hansen, a sophomore from Woodbury, finished tied for 2nd overall with a score of 144. Hansen shot a 72 on both days of the invite, and they also got notable performances from Ryan Isaacson, a freshman from Eau Claire, and senior Sean Murphy from Middleton, Wisconsin. The Blue Golds now will travel to Minnesota for their next match as they compete in the Bobby Krig Invitational on April 19th and 20th. In other Blue Gold sports, women's tennis beat Wartburg College of Iowa 9-0 on Saturday, and the men's team also won 8-1 against Wartburg College. That's it for this week in Blue Gold Sports. I'm Tyler Henderson, and this is the Blue Gold Sports Recap on WUEC FM 89.7 Blue Gold Radio.
That concludes the sports update. Thanks for the info, Tyler. You're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. If you're just tuning in, I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. Up next is Jenna Vandazan with her history segment that will feature history projects completed by UW-Eau Claire public history students. Take it away, Jenna.
I'm Jenna Vandazand, and this is the History segment on Blue Gold Radio. This segment includes history-related projects organized by UW-Eau Claire students and faculty. We will also feature presentations from the Eau Claire Alumni Oral History Project, headed by Dr. Erin Devlin and created by her former public history students. In preparation for the university's centennial anniversary coming up in 2016, Dr. Devlin organized multiple rounds of oral history interviews with a broad range of Eau Claire alumni. From the earliest graduating classes to modern-day Blue Golds, the public history students were able to capture insightful interviews about being a student at UW-Eau Claire, as well as the social, political, and economic factors that regularly affected the lives of its students. This week, we will hear an oral history presentation by Michael Schaup about class of 1953 graduate Harold Cronenberg, whose time as a student in Eau Claire was interrupted by World War II. He joined the service as a pilot, flew in dozens of missions during the war, and then returned to the State Teachers College to graduate in 1953. Schaup describes Cronenberg's transition from student to soldier and back again in this week's oral history segment.
A young man flies 41 missions over Europe during World War II, tempting fate each time, in a plane service members have renamed rigor mortis. How do you go from that to attending college in quiet, peaceful Eau Claire, Wisconsin? Harold Cronenberg, class of 1953 from the State Teachers College at Eau Claire, had to make that journey. A journey from Eau Claire to World War II and back. My name is Mike Schaup. I'm a graduate student participating in the UW-Eau Claire Centennial Oral History Project, and I was fortunate to learn more about Mr. Cronenberg's journey from soldier to student, from Eau Claire to war, and back to the State Teachers College at Eau Claire. There isn't enough time to tell Mr. Cronenberg's entire story. One of the first things you gather upon meeting Mr. Cronenberg is that he is a man of great humility. He won't readily admit to this, but he's one of the best athletes the area ever produced. Professional baseball player, national champion racquetball player, scratch golfer, golden gloves boxer, the list goes on. Mr. Cronenberg also taught social studies for many years and published several books. After speaking with him, you leave wondering what you've done with your life. The story I want to tell, the story Harold Cronenberg will tell, is of that young soldier and his path back to Eau Claire. The story began as he enlisted in the Army.
Yes, I enlisted when I was 17, and I didn't like high school. I didn't like school. I was not a very good student, and as a result, I could not go into the Army until I was 18, so I waited till my 18th birthday before I enlisted, or before I signed up when I was 17, but before I could go in, I had to be 18. So I did not go my senior year. The only branch of service you'd go in as a 17-year-old was the Navy. The rest, and of course, the Army, Air Force was part of the Army at that time. It was not a separate branch until 47. Mm-hmm. So, and when I got in into service, I immediately, as soon as possible anyway, signed up for the Air Force and went to Las Vegas, Nevada for gunnery school, and eventually trained, and went overseas. I got overseas in Tunis in December of 43.
Though a very young man, the Air Corps would take Mr. Cronenberg to many new countries. After completing his training, Mr. Cronenberg was shipped across the Atlantic, first to Africa, and then to Italy as a ball turret gunner on a B-17 Flying Fortress. Mr. Cronenberg's war experiences changed him in a way you might not expect. His mission sparked an interest in the places he bombed.
I saw places, I bombed places that I hadn't heard of before, and I think it stimulated my mind, motivated me a little bit to want to get an education so I could know more what was happening, because I was just a totally ignorant of things that happened, not in combat, but the places I went.
Mr. Cronenberg's mission sparked an interest in geography. Eventually, he would become a social studies teacher. But first, he would need to decide what to do after he left the Army. I asked what drew Mr. Cronenberg to college after the war.
Well, mainly the GI Bill.
Okay.
But I had a hard time in college my first year.
Mr. Cronenberg spent the first year and a half of college attending classes and playing baseball at UW-Madison before returning to Eau Claire to attend the teacher's college. It would be difficult to overstate the importance of the GI Bill that he mentioned. It allowed veterans like Mr. Cronenberg to go to college and purchase homes to start families. It was perhaps the greatest stimulant in creating a middle class in the history of the United States. Mr. Cronenberg expanded further on this.
I would not have gone to school, could not have gone to school without the GI Bill. I didn't have the finances, I didn't have the background, and it was certainly a benefit for me. And incidentally, getting down to our college here in 1947, and when I went to school down here, there were a lot of GI people back from the war. Maybe I can tell you, I know they had three barracks down at the college. Two of them were classrooms, barracks taken up either from the Air Force or the Army. And they had one where it was a recreation room where they had a pool table. And the GIs occupied those buildings a lot, played a lot of cards there, that type of thing. And then we had the housing area. Are you acquainted with the housing area?
Yes.
And I lived in that for 2 years, and just in the winter time. I don't know how many buildings were there, but they were not Nissan huts. They were barracks, fabricated barracks. And I lived up there for 2 years with my wife. And I can't remember when it was torn down, but a lot of our college GIs lived in those barracks and went to school.
Returning veterans faced unique challenges. Many had spent several years away from home. Many were married. Many had to immediately decide how to earn a living to provide for their families while going to college. Fortunately, some, like Mr. Cronenberg, had people willing to accommodate these challenges.
The difference was that a lot of the veterans worked at night. Some of them worked at the rubber plant, for example, and they'd work from 11 to 7, and then they'd go to school. And I don't know if you know of Laura Sutherland, who was a teacher at the college. She's one of the best teachers I ever had. She taught history, and there were all probably 8-9 of us veterans in her class. And these veterans, you know, they'd be tired, they'd fall asleep in the back row. And Laura would never wake them up and shake them or stop. And she'd simply go to the window and pull the shade down and let it go and flap around, and they'd all wake up. I don't think I ever fell asleep. She was so interesting to me.
These days, helping veterans has become a national priority. In the days Mr. Cronenberg returned to school, it was far less of a priority. In the immediate aftermath of the war, the college's director of training and placement, Eugene McPhee, wrote a letter to the state legislature entitled, A Veteran Speaks His Mind. In it, he lamented that the state government was not committing the funds given to it by the federal government to go to the state's teacher schools. Instead, the state was committing half those funds to the general fund. McPhee argued that this was penalizing all students of teacher schools, and especially veterans. Under President Davies, the college applied to be one of the colleges in the UW system to provide testing and counseling services to veterans. Telling of the times, though, most of the transition for veterans was focused on vocational or technical skills, preparing veterans for time lost in the war and returning to the workforce, not on the psychological scars. When the program was created, less than one veteran per day was showing up for counseling and testing services. This reluctance to seek help and to talk about war experiences was discussed by Mr. Cronenberg.
So you didn't talk about it. That's just the way it was. There are a few people. I give speeches in schools occasionally, quite often, as a matter of fact. And one of the first things I hear, and one of the things that I hear the most of, is the kids saying, well, my dad was in World War II, but I didn't know anything about it. And whenever I talk to anybody, I said, by golly, if you had a dad, an uncle, or a grandpa, get his information, because when he's gone, you won't know what he did.
Fortunately, that separation from fellow veterans does not continue today. Mr. Cronenberg has been able to connect with some of the men who served with him in Europe. Among them is Joe Collector, who he was able to connect with in an emotional reunion this year.
Joe Collector, who was a Vulture, a gunner, and another crew, was in my barracks over in England, and I hadn't seen him since maybe the day before D-Day. And I reunited with him in Norfolk, Virginia a few months ago, and we just had a wonderful time.
A reunion of old friends whose bond was formed in a distant land. Harold Cronenberg's journey took him all over the world, from Tunisia to England to most corners of the United States during his baseball career. Ultimately, his journey led him back to Eau Claire, to the Teachers College, and the new path that opened up for him in teaching, coaching, writing, and public speaking that have filled his life for the last 60 years. His transition from soldier to this new path happened at the State Teachers College in Eau Claire, and it stands as a testament to the veterans of his generation and to the veterans and all students of subsequent generations who used their UW-Eau Claire experiences to embark on their new paths along their life journeys.
That was Public History graduate student Michael Schaup in his presentation on class of 1953 alum Harold Cronenberg. If you missed today's presentation or want to listen to this or any other Blue Gold Radio segment, be sure to check out our website, wuec.org, to replay the broadcasts or share your favorite stories. I'm Jenna Van de Zand, and you're listening to Blue Gold Radio on 89.7 WUEC FM Eau Claire.
For that, Jenna. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC Eau Claire 89.7 FM. I'm Sammy Wenzel, your host for Hour 2. Up next, we have Brianne Liga, who is reporting on the information she found out while interviewing a recent psychology graduate. New research from CASE with photo mapping of alcohol use in the Eau Claire area. For further information, keep listening to Brianne.
Yeah.
Hi, and thank you for tuning in to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC 89.7 FM Eau Claire. My name is Brianne Liga, your station manager, and I'm here with Jade Goetz, a recent psychology grad, and she's doing research on alcohol use using participatory photo mapping. Hi, Jade. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Brianne. Thank you for having me.
All right, Jade. So just explain to me what does this mean? What is participatory photo mapping?
Participatory photo mapping is the method that we implemented in order to give voice to residents in the historic Randall Park neighborhood regarding their opinions on alcohol use and abuse in their neighborhood.
All right. And so what kind of feedback did you get from the people who participated in this study?
The people who participated really brought us a whole array of things that they found to be interesting to them. Some people reported things like litter and then the vandalism and theft that alcohol use brings about or sort of exacerbates. Also, there was a lot of complaints about noise from people walking home from the bars after bar close or people going to house parties. But there's also concern for the students, too, regarding things like the advertisements for cheap alcohol in the windows of some of the businesses on Water Street. And then binge drinking in general was just a general concern. It was also kind of a positive and a negative because we recruited students and residents, like permanent residents in the area. So those permanent residents were more of families because Lakeshore Elementary is also in the historic Randall Park neighborhood. So a lot of student renters probably aren't aware that they share their neighborhood with families, young families, older families, and then professionals in the area. So it's really an interesting mixture of people in the historic Randall Park neighborhood. And if you're not familiar with the area, it's about 1st Ave down to 9th or 10th Ave, and then from Menominee Street and Water Street all the way back to around Lake Street is where we concentrated our research.
So would you say this is kind of the student housing area that you looked
at? Yeah, that's what you generally think of as a student housing area, but there are permanent residents there as well.
And why did you choose this area to look at?
We chose it because of the interesting mixture of people and also because of its near location to Water Street, which is obviously the bar district for the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. So it's kind of, it's a neighborhood that is uniquely positioned right next to the bar area, whereas in a lot of other college cities, the bar district will be kind of nearby the neighborhood, but not right inside the neighborhood. So it's kind of an interesting problem, I guess you could say.
And when you say like photo mapping, what is the process of that?
So basically what we did is we recruited students, and then we also recruited a sample of the permanent residents. And we got everyone together and we had kind of an initial meeting where we instructed them kind of vaguely because we wanted them to interpret the research question in their own way as it pertained to their life. So we kind of asked them questions such as, what are your concerns around alcohol in your neighborhood, or what is the significance of alcohol in this environment? We wanted to have kind of a balanced discussion about the positives and the negatives of alcohol use, but we didn't want to ask any leading questions right off the bat so that people could kind of fill in the blanks.
First, I'll start with the positives. What positive responses did you get?
We had a lot of people taking photos of themselves drinking with friends or drinking around a bonfire, even drinking on Water Street because that's something that students really enjoy here. So it's kind of a personal or like a business positive.
And then what sort of negatives did you see?
Everything from environmental concerns to noise concerns to concerns for the people who were engaging in binge drinking and over drinking. Really all the negatives had to do with binge drinking.
Sure. And so did people give you pictures of things that they captured?
Right. So after our initial meeting, we sent everyone out into their neighborhood so that they could take around 10 pictures from their personal lives as things occurred that related to alcohol. And then we all came back and we had a meeting together where we got to share our photos and then add the narratives to it so people could explain what their photos meant to them. And then after that discussion where all the participants got to share with each other what they found and what they thought to be important and how alcohol impacted their life, then they got to talk about kind of summarizing the problems that they all found and then trying to come up with solutions that they thought would be helpful and effective.
Well, what did you do with all the photos that you received, and how did you come up with some sort of conclusion from this?
Right. So the second half of it, and the part where me and Peggy O'Halloran teamed up with Ryan Weichalt and Nathan Schaefer of the Geography Department to put these photos on a map, and so we could actually GPS from the coordinates that were on the pictures. So we have maps of all the different themes of problems and positives, and then we have separate maps to show all the pictures that were from each category and where they were taken to see if there were any like certain problem areas or where the concentrations of each theme were.
And so how did you come up with this idea to photo map the Randall Park District?
We thought that participatory photo mapping would be the most effective method because it directly goes in for a firsthand look at what the problems are. Me and Peggy could have went in and kind of looked around and seen what we thought the problems were in the area and tried to go about fixing those. But as non-residents of the area, we thought that it would be most effective to hear about the problems that people faced from the people themselves. And then hear their solutions too, because they're the ones living, you know, we really wanted to focus on their lived experiences so that we could bring about solutions that were the most directly tied to the problems.
All right, great. And I guess what is the most interesting response that you got from someone that participated in the study? What stood out to you the most?
I think that the most unique response was someone's personal struggle with alcohol use and abuse. I think that sometimes there's a line between am I having fun with alcohol, or is it sort of something that I need, I guess? So the most interesting person who shared, I think, shared their personal struggle with alcohol. So that was sort of a microcosm of kind of the whole neighborhood's struggle with alcohol being a fun thing, but alcohol also being something that makes the neighborhood less than what it could be, I guess.
Sure. And so what do you hope this research will bring? What sort of changes do you hope to see from finding out what you did about the area and alcohol use?
I think that one thing that I'd like to see is more unity among the neighborhood members, more people looking to their neighbors with more respect and seeing who's actually living next door, asking what their expectations are, and just kind of having a really respectful relationship with those around them so that you're thinking about each other when, say, you're going to throw a party or you really need to go to bed early or anything like that. Just kind of thinking of others before yourself and remembering that the neighborhood is a great place to live. It's a shared place. And it's somewhere that is a really nice place to live, too.
Great. Fantastic. As a student, or a former student since you graduated in December at UW-Eau Claire, what has this research project opened up for you as far as just being able to do research with professors, with Peggy O'Halloran, and fellow peers?
It was a really awesome experience, and I actually just got accepted to Claremont Graduate University in California to further my education in public health and applied psychology. So it's just been a really fun experience and a really rewarding experience with having to work with people and make sure that they are heard on this issue. But also it's helped me too. So it's been a really, really great experience. I recommend to everyone who's interested in any sort of research to just reach out to a faculty member because they all have ideas and they all want you to get involved.
Fantastic. And congratulations on your acceptance.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on to Blue Gold Radio on WUEC 89.7 FM Eau Claire.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Brianne Liga doing the research segment where I interviewed Jade Getz on alcohol use using photo mapping. Back to hour two. Thanks for that great information, Bree.
We're almost out of time here for hour two, but before I send it over to Courtney with hour three, we have my event pick of the week. For this week, the event I have chosen to highlight is the Harlem Globetrotters visit to Eau Claire. That's right, this exhibition basketball group will be in town on April 7th at North High School. The Globetrotters basketball team uses the combination of athleticism, theater, and comedy to bring smiles and awe to the faces of many. The Harlem Globetrotters were founded in 1926 and have played more than 20,000 exhibition games in 120 different countries so far. So if you and your family and friends want to witness some mesmerizing basketball handling, amazing slam dunks, and of course some side-splitting comedy, then definitely mark your calendars for April 7th, 7 p.m. at Eau Claire North High School. For more information on the event and ticket sales, visit www.harlemglobetrotters.com and visit the tickets link and search for the full schedule for April 7th. If you know of an event coming up that you really want people to know about and think that I should feature as my pick of the week, let me know. Email me at wensels@uwec.edu. All right, that wraps up hour two for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Sammy Wenzel, and it has been a great time being your host for this past hour. I'll be back next week, but now it is time to send it over to hour three. Stay tuned for Courtney and all of that she has to say.